are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. I'm Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with David Vermil. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about James Harden's new move. It's not a travel. Tim Duncan's NBA's return, and Team USA losing even more players for the upcoming World Cup. But let's start in Washington, where the Wizards will offer Bradley Beal a three-year, $111 million maximum contract extension once he becomes eligible this Friday. Yet Beal's agent, Mark Bartlestein, told ESPN's agent Wojnarowski that he'll need time to consider it. Beal has until October 21st to sign the extension, but given that he could also become eligible for a Supermax this offseason, and given that the Wizards aren't very good, isn't it a no-brainer that Beal should just turn this thing down, David?
We're seeing more and more that money isn't the necessary factor driving player decisions. And as they get more and more controlled, you know, much to a lot of people's chagrin, at the same time, I don't think that they're necessarily motivated the same way they were to collect as much as possible. Like, he still could make a lot of money one way or the other, whether he gets a Supermax or not. And I don't know that the signing the extension or turning it down is necessarily a bad decision on his part either. So as far as I'm concerned, I could understand why his perspective is, I don't want to tie myself to Washington any further than I have to. I want to keep my options open. I want to see what happens in the future and how this team continues to shake out. They've made some front office decisions, obviously, but there's a lot of questions about the roster. There's a lot of questions about the view and the process of this team moving forward. So I could understand Bradley saying, you know what, I'm not quite ready to sign my name and tie my future to the Washington Wizards and that they'll do right by me, man. Maybe he has no faith. Maybe he has no existing relationship with Tommy Shepard, the newly hired GM. And, you know, to some degree, maybe he doesn't feel comfortable that they'll look out for his interests 100%. So I think it makes a lot of sense, to be honest with you. I mean, Bartlestein is a smart agent. I think he understands the nature of the game, and I think he understands how to get the best opportunity for his client. And it's ultimately what Beal wants, what his priorities are, and it might not be to get as much money as possible.
Either if you want the money, you turn this thing down. If you want to leave Washington, you turn this thing down. There's really no reason to take it unless you want to be in Washington for a little bit less money. That makes no sense. Like, I don't even understand why he's considering it. Is it just out of good faith? Is it just to sort of be a good sport and look like a good teammate because you're going to be on this team maybe for another year? Maybe it's just polite. Maybe this is just the polite thing to do. Maybe this is what, if you're an agent, you know, this is how you play the game. You don't just like come out and say, we're not taking an extension, don't worry about it, and make an enemy for no reason. So I guess I'm just more confused. What's to consider here? What are they considering? I guess the only thing to consider is, I sign this thing now, I have long-term stability. But Bradley Beal is an Iron Man. I don't even why would he even worry about that? So I don't see him signing this extension at all, right? Like, there's no way he signs this extension.
And I know that opens up the door for a lot of teams that, you know, or from a lot of fans' perspective, that means that a trade request is probably somewhere down the line.
Yes. Yeah, and that's where we're going with this, right? So if you don't sign the extension, do you then request a trade? Because I think you could do, maybe if you're Bartlestein, you're like, look, we're not going to come out here and do the Kyrie Irving, you know, Anthony Davis playbook and demand a trade and make a whole PR scene out of it. We'll play nice. We'll tell you that we're considering it. But just know that come October 21st, our decision, we're going to consider it. We'll tell everybody we're considering it. But by October 21st, our answer is going to be no. No matter what we consider. And just be prepared for us to maybe be on the move.
But yeah,
next summer.
Given what we saw most recently with Anthony Davis, isn't this kind of somewhat problematic? Like, Bradley Beal, I don't think is at the same level as a Kyrie Irving or a Anthony Davis, obviously. Not as a player, but even in terms of overall popularity. And maybe that's the issue. But at the same time, like, he's not going to take as much of a PR hit as those guys took, but do you still want to play that game? Do you still want to risk the kind of stigma that comes with waiting too long to make a trade request? Like, there's ways of making this request without becoming public, without becoming ugly. And, you know, he's not necessarily tied to this organization anyway. They drafted him. He's given everything he possibly could there. He's adapted. He's evolved. He's had to deal with turnover in the front office. He's had to deal with turnover with the coaching position. He's had to deal with, you know, players and John Wall and injury issues and things of that sort. He's been a good soldier. He's been a good player. a team player. And at this point, if you want to do the right thing and you eventually, if that aligns with your request to play elsewhere, why not go to the front office sooner rather than later? Why wait this long in order to make that request known?
And maybe that's what's going on behind closed doors. And maybe that's sort of, this is laying the groundwork for that when he doesn't opt for this thing. And I should clarify on the Supermax thing, he's not eligible for it now. He could be eligible for it if he hits some certain markers this season, which, you know, we don't have to go down that whole road and try to talk about Bradley Beal's finances here, but he could be eligible for the Supermax this summer, which would keep him presumably in Washington, or at least assigned a contract under Washington for, you know, with that through the Supermax extension,
right.
Or he cannot sign any extension this summer and then and just wait to become a free agent the following summer, the summer of 2021. So he's locked into Washington under contract at least until at least 2021. But we've seen just this summer, that doesn't even matter anymore. And I think once it becomes clear that he's not going to sign this extension, that's when the clock starts. The clock starts October 21st. When he does not sign the extension, that's when the Wizards they have to look around and try to figure out what's going to go on with Bradley Beal. Because there's a reason we keep talking about Bradley Beal after every other player in the league has been traded, right? He's like the last guy that everybody is looking at as the obvious next domino to fall here. Everybody on the planet knows that the Wizards are going to trade Bradley Beal, except for the Wizards right now. And I just, side note really quick, I've got the Tommy Shepard has a statement about Bradley Beal up in front of me here, and he said that he wants to work with Mark Bartlestein in good faith, and that, you know, Washington has done a really good job as far as what they did in free agency, and then said that they, you know, in bringing back Thomas Bryant. So that's where Washington is right now. They're really excited about bringing back Thomas Bryant.
So you don't think
that's the pitch?
I mean, from Beal's perspective, he probably does not want to waste his prime years any longer. Who knows what kind of player John Wall will be when he returns to health.
And what kind of player is Thomas Bryant going to be?
Well, that's a big question. I guess that's the deciding factor, isn't it?
Future superstar.
Does he have that kind of potential?
No, I just, like, why is Tommy Shepard talking about Thomas Bryant in response to keeping Bradley Beal? That's everything about Washington that you need to know right now. And it's not disrespect to Thomas Bryant, but what are we doing right now? That's like, it's just a weird thing to say.
I mean, I guess you have to kind of lay the groundwork for some positivity there. Be like, look, we re-signed our guy. That's something, isn't it? I mean, we didn't lose anybody of great significance. And that's not entirely true also. They lose a...
They lost Satoransky.
Yeah, exactly.
He's their best point guard. So, yeah, the clock is starting with Bradley Beal. Let's get this thing rolling. Tim Duncan is back in the NBA. Buy or sell is next. You're listening to Locked On NBA. Postmates is your personal food delivery, grocery delivery, whatever kind of delivery service all year round. For a limited time, Postmates is giving Locked On listeners $100 in free delivery credit for your first 7 days. $100 in free delivery credit for your first 7 days. Download the Postmates app and use the code Locked On. Tim Duncan is joining the Spurs as an assistant coach under Greg Popovich, the team announced Monday. Popovich joked, "It is only fitting that after I served loyally for 19 years as Tim Duncan's assistant, that he returns the favor." David, are you buying or selling the 43-year-old Tim Duncan as an assistant NBA coach?
You know, this one is really tough to figure out because on the surface, I absolutely buy Duncan as a coach. Like, I don't know that there's any player that is as qualified, you know, and a former player as qualified as Duncan to be a coach. I mean, we've heard from opponents that even in game, Duncan was willing to offer advice to younger players and say, no, don't do that. If you do that, you're giving me too much space to get to the rim, you know, kind of even telling opponents how to guard him more effectively. So he's seen enough, he's done enough over the course of his career, obviously, that he could be an excellent coach. And I think he's a good communicator for all the jokes about him being quiet, etc. He's good on a one-on-one level, especially with, you know, active players. And so I think as a coach, he'd be an excellent addition. But do I see him being willing at 43 years old to emerge and go into the grind of coaching, to be there constantly with the franchise, to travel with a team all over, to make this a long-term commitment where, what, is he angling for a head coach? Is this Tim Duncan future head coach? Is he the heir apparent to Popovich at some point?
That's the question here. That is the biggest question. What's the goal? What's the end game here? Is Tim Duncan just wanting to be around the team for a year? If that's the case, yeah, I buy that. That's cool. Bring in Tim Duncan for a year as an assistant. You know, let him just be around the team for a while. That's great. And I think he would add a lot of value. Wouldn't just be a charity case, but...
Absolutely not. Yeah.
It would... Is he the next Spurs head coach in waiting? If Greg Popovich hangs things up in these next couple of years like we expect him to, is Tim Duncan the next coach of the Spurs? I mean, are we living in a world where that happens? I mean, I don't doubt anything in today's NBA, but I also just don't really see it. I don't even see that as being this. That's not really the Spurs way. They hire coaches. They sit on the bench with Greg Popovich for 10 years and learn the ropes and figure out the NBA. And then they go on and become Mike Budenholzer and all these guys that are part of this Greg Popovich coaching tree. They've got guys already on that bench next to Popovich who have put in the time and done the work and will be head coaches in the NBA at some point for the Spurs or not. And you'd figure it would be one of those guys that would be interviewed and eventually given the and hired for that job, not Tim Duncan waltzing in, you know, after being the greatest Spurs player ever. I mean, this is no disservice to Tim Duncan, but it would seem like that, right? It would seem like he would just have waltzed in, and because he is Tim Duncan, he now becomes the Spurs head coach over all these other guys who put in the time.
Well, I think first of all, we should clarify that they did take a hit as far as their assistant coaches are concerned. They lost Ettore Messina and Ekpe Udoh, I guess. I think those were their top assistants, and they both left the team this past offseason. So I think their lead assistant is actually not one of the guys at all, but Becky Hammon. I think she's the top assistant with the Spurs at this point. Duncan obviously has familiarity. I mean, he played while Hammon was there as an assistant coach, so that's kind of interesting to see how that dynamic plays out. I think that's a potential risk there too, because I think Hammon is a character, is somebody that a lot of teams have looked at, or mm-hmm. a lot of fans in particular have looked at as a potential head coaching option. She certainly has the experience. She's coached under one of the best coaches of all time. So, you know, I think if you're bringing in Duncan and you know, you're risking that PR kind of bouncing back on you and saying, you know what, if you're going to leapfrog Becky Hammon, that's a dangerous game to play there, especially with you know, so many hirings happening all over the league, and rightfully so. I think, you know, if the knock on Becky Hammon on why she didn't get hired elsewhere as a head coach was because she didn't have the experience, well, now she certainly has the experience over Tim Duncan, at least as a coach. And so that should be the only qualification. So, I mean, is Duncan prepared to be Becky Hammon's assistant?
Right. Is Tim Duncan going to... Is he going to sit on the bench for a decade before he get... Like, I don't know. I don't know what the goal is. And look, To answer the question, I'm buying it. I'm buying Tim Duncan as an assistant coach because I don't think it's a long-term thing. I think he's going to do this, and he's going to see just what sort of doors it opens up for him. Maybe he just doesn't know what he wants to do right now. He just knows he likes basketball. He wants to be around it. We heard all these things when he retired. So he probably just wants to be around it, and maybe he ends up in the Spurs front office. Maybe he ends up going to a college job of some kind. I don't know. Who knows what happens? Maybe he's probably just... He wants to get back into basketball, obviously. And that part does not surprise me, right? That him wanting to be back in basketball, around basketball, doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen him play there. We've seen him practice with the team. He's been a fixture around the franchise even in the last couple seasons since he's retired. And they still want that excitement. They still want to feel that adrenaline. They still want to compete against the current crop of players. So, I mean, this should be interesting practices, if nothing else.
James Harden, who tries to add something new to his game every offseason, he took the step-back jumper to a new level last season. Many accused that move of being a travel. Well, in a Q&A session last week, Harden told fans that he will be working on yet another move this summer, and that it might look even more like a travel, but he cautions refs not to call it because, according to him, it is not a travel. David, this is a pretty smart move by Harden to get out in front of this thing and start the PR campaign for his new move early. Are you buying or selling?
I guess I have no choice but to buy it. I think, I think a lot of his shots have been travels. I don't know that many people, and maybe I'm probably one of them, don't know the definition of what a travel is or not. And it often looks like that, you know, his step back might be a travel, but he gets the benefit of the call more often than not. And I think kind of forewarning referees and fans that this move is coming is absolutely, as you said, a brilliant move, because, you know, now all of a sudden you kind of lay that groundwork saying, look, I'm going to do something else. And he can't possibly be experimenting with a new move and already saying it's going to look like a travel. It's going to look even more like a travel without knowing that somehow, I guess it kind of walks the fine line of what is or isn't a travel. So to me, he's kind of putting this out there a little bit publicly. And again, since he's already gotten the benefit of the call so frequently in the past, are refs really going to say, no, this is where I draw the line. The step back is okay, but this new move, whatever it might be, is clearly a travel, and we're going to call that as often as possible. I think they're just going to change eventually, and they're just kind of adapt to allow him to do whatever move he wants.
If you have to tell somebody that it's not a travel, it's probably a travel, right?
Well, yeah, but it's looked like a travel for years, yes. Right? Almost all of his moves look like travel.
I'm buying this. I think this is great. I think this is so great because he knows that he's going to be traveling. He knows that he's going to at least look. He's like, it looks like a travel, but it's not. Well, I'm pretty sure if it looks like a travel, it's a travel. That's what a travel is. It's just get ahead of it. I love this. I love this that he's adding a new move, and he's working on it in the gym. You know, presumably, from what we understand here, he's working on this at the gym. He's probably videotaping himself and seeing footage of it, and he's probably like, man, that looks like a travel. But I know what I'm doing, and it's not a travel. Or maybe I really know the rules, and it's not a travel. And look, the step-back jumper, because of the gathering rules, is not technically a travel. Now, sometimes he travels when he does it, but when he executes it the way that he is supposed to execute it, it is not a travel. So there might be some sort of loophole or some other fine text kind of thing that he's exploiting here. But it's really, really smart that he's at least putting it out there now. And maybe he's sort of also laying the groundwork for what he thinks should be another MVP type of campaign, another top two finish here. I don't know.
Undoubtedly. Like, he's already looking at his free throws attempts, climbing even more than they already are.
How can I get to 24 a game? Kyle Lowry has hired a new agent, Mark Bartlestein of Priority Sports, who also represents Bradley Beal. Lowry is set to be a free agent next summer. David, are you buying or selling that this is a move to prepare for that free agency?
You know what? We're buying a lot today, and absolutely I'm buying this. I mean, for Lowry, a smart player, somebody who understands the landscape of what's going on there, to hire a new agent, somebody as successful as Bartlestein, I think makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure who his agent was beforehand, but I think he's absolutely preparing for a new NBA landscape, kind of seeing what his options are, especially given the kind of turmoil that Toronto is going to go through this season without Kawhi Leonard. It should be an interesting offseason for Should be an interesting season for the Raptors, but it should be an interesting offseason for Lowry and whatever his options might be, because he's getting older, he's a championship player, he still plays at a high level, great defender, etc. But at the same time, I think you definitely want to start laying the groundwork this year to kind of test the market, see what your options might be, and kind of gauge, you know, if there's a big contract elsewhere waiting for you.
As soon as Kyle Lowry left for the Clippers, the clock started on Kyle Lowry. And I would even argue that he might not even wait for free agency. That the Raptors might not wait for free agency. That the Raptors might see the writing on the wall here and say, you know what, let's trade him and Masai Ujiri. Because it's like, I don't want you to walk away for nothing. Let's trade you midseason. There are teams that could use Kyle Lowry right now. So I think this is laying the groundwork for Kyle Lowry's next place. And it's just, he just doesn't fit with what Toronto needs to do right now. They are going to be rebuilding. They're going to be rebuilding, I guess, around Pascal Siakam now. And just sort of whatever that looks like. And Kyle Lowry has helped them win a championship. He's the greatest Raptor ever. And he gets to always be that. Proven otherwise. But
wow.
Is he not?
Raptor ever?
Yeah.
I don't think he's even the greatest Raptor over DeMar DeRozan. And I think Kyle Lowry?
He won a championship.
Okay, he was on the roster when they won a championship.
Yes, I mean, that means he won the championship. That's part of winning it.
So was OG Anunoby. I don't think he's the greatest small forward in Raptors history.
No, that's Kawhi Leonard.
Wow. Yeah, you'd think so. No, I don't know.
Kyle Lowry's the greatest Raptor ever. Come on now.
Wow. No, we'll have to go check in with our guys over at Locked On Raptors, but I don't know if that's the case.
Where are the Locked On Raptors guys?
Sean Woodley.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk to Sean. Kyle Lowry. Okay. More and more players are withdrawing from Team USA's World Cup squad. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to Locked On NBA. In anticipation of the birth of his second son, Bradley Beal is among the latest players to withdraw from Team USA in the past couple of weeks, joining Anthony Davis, James Harden, Eric Gordon, CJ McCollum, Tobias Harris, and Kyle Lowry. David, we talked about the greatest Raptor ever, Kyle Lowry. David, we talked about Davis dropping out last week, and you mentioned how you were concerned about Team USA going forward. I can't imagine that you're feeling much better about it now.
I am not. I think there are going to be legitimate... Look, other teams have taken hits as well. I mean, I think this is just the standard around the world nowadays. It's tough to compete at a high level and commit to a professional position and doing this as an alleged amateur. I see that this team is going to have some significant challenges to them. At the same time, they're still favored. But I wonder what the issues are. And I think there was a great piece by SB Nation's Ricky O'Donnell kind of looking at what the issues might be. And he kind of hinted at there were a number of potential factors, none of which would seem really egregious. Like, there's no significant reason why these players are taking this time out. Like, does Tobias Harris really need to take the 6 weeks off so that he can concentrate on being a 35% shooter? I don't understand, like, what's going to happen and why does he need to take the time away from the experience of USA basketball to learn from Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr and others? To me, that's far outweighs the benefit of whatever it is that he thinks he's going to be able to accomplish outside of USA basketball. Among O'Donnell's factors there, the fact that, maybe the politicizing of the country, maybe it's not the same kind of pride that you once took in representing the red, white, and blue. There's also maybe a lack of clicks. Maybe all the players at the top of the roster are already firmly linked to one team or another, so there's no need for them to kind of, possibly hook up with another player and talk to another player and see what their future plans might be. That was kind of an interesting angle there, that maybe they're not necessarily kind of figuring out where your future contract's going to be. They're not trying to force something that, allegedly, well, like the...
Everybody just got traded, so you don't have to really worry about that business meeting anymore, right? You're just... Right. That just all happened. I think those are all real reasons, and I hadn't actually thought about the political thing. I also... Look, these sort of overseas trips, whether you're going to China... Europe, Japan, wherever. It always helped their brand, right? It helped the player's brand. It helped you get in front of new fans, and it helped the shoe deals, it helped with the commercials, it helped with everything. Yeah. And with it almost feels like with the NBA's popularity, they are so popular, like, do they even need this anymore? I mean, you can buy league pass in almost every country now. You can watch the NBA on YouTube or Twitter from your iPhone anywhere in the world. If you're one of these guys, do you even need to do this stuff anymore? Unless it almost feels like unless you already have, like, if you're like Dwayne Wade and you're with Leaning, then you're making these trips, right? Because it's part of your shoe deal. But if you're part of the big Nike group, then you're doing these trips every so often around the world with the other Nike guys. I don't know that you necessarily need to do this anymore and then have to go play basketball, Like, you can go with these shoe deals and these shoe companies, and you can just, and you're exposed to these markets during your regular season. You don't have to play there to get exposed to these regular markets. You don't have to work like you have to work for this to go over there. So maybe it's a combination of that. It's a combination of maybe they might not be super pumped to represent the USA right now. I think that's a really good point. And you just sort of combine all these factors, and none of these guys are really in love with the idea of having to go over to China and play in this World Cup. And the event that goes from September 1st to September 15th, it's just a month after that, the regular season starts. So even with the
first week of October is when the first preseason game starts.
Right, yeah, that's what not even counting like training camp and preseason and all that. So it's just a lot. It's just a lot. I just don't really... I don't, like, other than just wanting to play for Team USA, and when you saw Bradley Beal, according to the report about him, he really, debated about this for a long time because he's always been part of Team USA since high school, but obviously, he's having a second kid, and that takes precedence over this, and that's the only reason that he's not going, so there's still players who want to be a part of this, that take pride in being a part of this, but it just seems like an overwhelming a bunch of the big-time guys, the superstars who need to be on this team, don't really want to be on it.
Yeah, there's still enough talent there. You know, not a lot of all-NBA talent, as they pointed out. I think Chris Middleton was one of the few players there. I can't remember who the other one
All-star
was.
All-star Chris Middleton.
Yeah. Other than that, not a lot available there, but there's still a lot of top players there. Donovan Mitchell should have a good opportunity. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's for them. Maybe it's for some of these younger guys that haven't had the experience of shining at the highest level, and I'm curious to see how they respond. But I hope they don't take it too lightly either, because I know a lot of teams will be looking to the USA and looking to that group and trying to upset them. And their chances are a lot better now than they were a few weeks ago.
Yeah, we see this every so often anyway, right? There's like a little bit of a reload. Everybody freaks out and everything happens. But I do think that there's things to be watching here. There's definitely reasons to be concerned. Not just for this year, and you said this on last week's show, for the future of Team USA. What does this look like? What is the importance of this thing to NBA players going forward? But that's it for today. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On NBA and Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave us a review, and thanks for listening.